a massive Sunday night battle between the Suns and Mavs. Yes, they have a little bit of history. Yes, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving have a little bit of their own. We knew this one would be amazing. It lived up to those expectations. We're live on YouTube. Let's go.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
We're back. It's Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past six seasons, a writer at Suns.com, and the host of the Just Basketball Show, wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Sunday afternoon. If you're joining us live, maybe Monday, if you're catching up to start your week, thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen. We're available everywhere. No paywall, free always. The best way to support the show is just to go ahead and hit follow or subscribe. Get it in your feed every Monday through Friday. And drop a comment down below if you're on YouTube with your thoughts on this crazy game, this crazy win. We have plenty to talk about today. Today's show, guys, is brought to you by Prize Picks. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's prizepicks.com. Promo code Locked On. All right, Brandon Duenas is joining us as he does every Sunday into Monday. We had a game. I've had this one circled, Brandon. The minute that the trade went through, I was like, we're going live after that game because it should be great. It lived up to it. We're going to go through, recap it as we always do. But off the top, your quick reaction to just the experience we just had watching that game, because there have not been a lot better than that this NBA season.
Mikal who? That's my first takeaway. I mean, Kevin Durant is insane. There's just nothing he can't do. This is why you trade for him. When it comes to late game situations, he's essentially a cheat code. It's like turning the sliders up to 99 on offense in 2K with how effortless he gets to his spot and just hits. It doesn't matter what the defense does. He just gets to his spot, rises over and hits it. Durant and Booker, I think at this point that they should give you a preview of why. That's probably the best duo in the NBA right now. And they're just getting familiar with each other. So it's going to be scary as things, you know, progress and they get more comfortable with each other.
Absolutely. I think we should just dive right into the late game situation, because I think that kind of illustrated everything that we're talking about, everything that makes this duo special, everything that this trade was all about. Again, the final score, 130-126, but we'll pick it up with about 2.5 minutes left, Brandon, to get to our moment of the game. To me, it kind of really, well, you could jump in at any point. I think really the entire fourth quarter was pretty good, but there was a stretch kind of midway through where it not to take anything away from how amazing it all was, but it was just back and forth shot making. And so I really want to jump in at the 2:30 mark or so. So Kyrie Irving misses a three right there. That's the one where Ish Wainwright kind of crowds his space. And you can tell me if there's another moment that sticks out to you, Brandon, but that's really where it starts for me. Mm-hmm. That does not get called as a foul. Kyrie falls to the floor. They try to call for it as they were all afternoon. The Suns get down the floor, miss a shot, get the offensive rebound, and then Ish ends up making a three. Then you get the Luka fouls in the post against Chris Paul. And then you have that Kevin Durant 14-foot pull-up shot. You have the Ayton tip-in. You have the Powell dunk on the lob from Luka, the alley-oop there. And then that 14-footer, that shot that I think you were just talking about, Brandon, that is why you get Kevin Durant. And then what do the Mavs do on the other side? Yep. They call a timeout. They get a shot for Luka. He misses a bunny, and that's the game. What jumps out from the way that the game closed with all of those incredible moments?
Yeah, like you said, it was just a lot of incredible shot making and just skilled basketball. It was fun to watch this game when the refs kind of got out of the way, which unfortunately wasn't the whole time, but there was some incredible moments just the back and forth, like you mentioned. And I think Ish Wainwright deserves a huge tip of the cap just with how clutch he was with his, you know, corner threes, made some big plays defensively, and like his size down low and guarding Luka, he was not moving an inch on a couple of those post-ups. So I think he was huge down the stretch, and it was a nice adjustment by Monty figuring out that Ross and Warren just kind of weren't the answer in this particular matchup. So that's kind of goes back to what we talked about, those playoff rotations of why Ish could be someone that closes out games due to his size. And if he's hitting shots, even better. So,
And he was guarding Luka late too, right? On a lot of those plays. Yeah. I think that we'll talk about the rotation and stuff more in depth, but he was fundamental to how the game ended. And I think the mm-hmm. sneaky thing, or maybe like the real factor of why I think he was able to stay on. Well, one is Ross and Warren, just, I don't know if they're going to be able to stop much of anybody defensively, but the fact that Wainwright can be the same guy who gets out and contests that Kyrie shot and makes him uncomfortable, and has some mm-hmm. moments against Christian Wood, and has some moments against Luka Doncic, that to me kind of illustrated why he was out there late in the game. And he definitely made a difference. I think Kevin Durant on that left extended post elbow, whatever you want to call it, shot Brandon. I counted three guys with a hand in his face. One from behind, two from in front, and there were people in the paint that made him have to pull up from there in the first place. That is about as good of a shot with those stakes in that moment that you'll find in the NBA.
100%. And I think, you know, it's one thing to watch Kevin Durant as just a fan. Like, we've seen him over the years. Like, we both know what he can do. But when it's for the team that you're watching specifically, and just like every little detail just and how it fits into this offense, it's just, it's insane to watch. And I think him and Booker taking turns torching defenses is really, you know, Jason Kidd, you know, credit to them. They do a great job of trying to, you know, make up for some of the lack of athleticism and size that they have defensively by playing some really interesting defensive schemes. But it just doesn't matter when you have that level of shot making. So kudos to Book and KD for figuring it out. And it's just awesome how seamless they already feel like they are fitting next to each other. It's like, you know, anyone can play next to Durant, but it feels like Booker's, you know, specifically tailor-made to just kind of fit in like a glove to how KD likes to operate.
I think we should spend a second. The shot is one thing and can't really be overlooked, because, I mean, that's why you get that guy, right? It's just about as unguardable as it possibly gets. But to your point, the fact that they were able to, that they have been able to, and that I knew this game would be the first test, right? Because even if they had struggled against Chicago or Charlotte for whatever reason, it would have been hard to learn a lot from that. It would have been them shooting themselves in the foot more than anything. We knew this game was going to be one where the team on the other side was very talented, a bad matchup, and was going to really test them and push them. And the fact that in that game, when you're already inevitably with two superstars trying to figure things out with Booker and Durant, already we're hearing some, okay, well, yeah, it's one thing to do it against Charlotte. It's one thing to do it against Chicago. What we're really going to have to look for is, can they do it late in games? Who's going to take that shot? Who's going to whatever? The answer is Kevin Durant. The answer was always going to be Kevin Durant. Tip of the hat to Booker for just taking that off of his plate without a problem. But the fact that they've been able to figure that out so quickly and balance it and get space for each other and just both score 35+, I mean, man, that I don't think I expected to be so seamless like it has been.
Yeah, it kind of felt like, you know, that graphic of the Kyrie LeBron where they just kind of took turns. I think it was like 41 points each in the finals. That's just kind of what this game felt like, with them just taking turns. And, you know, the crazy part about this Suns little 3-0 stretch with KD is, like, there's been so many holes in each game where, like, this team's not played anywhere near their full potential. Like, DeAndre was essentially a no-show offensively. Okogie couldn't make a three. He was 0-for-8. They got outshot at the free throw line by 13. So there's a lot that happened in that game that kind of went against them, and they still managed to pull off a win against a good team that just shot lights out from three as well. And Tim Hardaway Jr. just turns into Klay Thompson every time the Suns play the Mavericks. So, you know, Dallas is a tough matchup for the Suns.
Yeah, we thought without Spencer Dinwiddie around, this was going to clear up. And then, nope, you forgot about me, Tim Hardaway said. But two more things to get to from this last stretch of the game that I ran through real quick that I don't want to pass over. One, to follow up on what you just said about Ayton. So you could hear Dave Pasch losing his mind over it, kind of, because he's a local guy and he knows the dynamics of this team probably better than most play-by-play guys for ESPN would. Mm-hmm. He's like tracking in real time how long it had been since Ayton got that shot, had gotten a shot. Then to have the ball go out of bounds and he gets mauled, and then to fight for that still, get 16 rebounds today, And then to have the wherewithal to stay engaged, get that tip dunk, that was really impressive to me. I don't want to make too much of a guy kind of like doing his job. I know people are going to kind of say that, or they will say, oh, he should have been more involved, whatever. I'm not even here to have that debate. I just want to give credit to making a big play when it counted. And then the other part is, and you can respond to both in a second, the Miss Bunny by Luka, I just want to like sit and kind of revel in that a little bit. You and I were texting during the game that this guy is becoming less fun to watch, it feels like, by the season. And it is a big bummer because I do think he's crazy talented, but the way that he makes these games feel and look as an entertainment product really sucks lately. And so him missing that and then Booker rubbing it in his face and the double text and all that stuff was pretty satisfying, I have to admit.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think, you know, the push-offs were getting a little bit crazy. And it wasn't just Luka. Christian Wood got away with some stuff, too, on Torrey Craig, where he was just bulldozing him. And
on Ish, you know, too, honestly, on some of those rebounds.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm all for the physical play offensively. I think I just want it both ways. That's the thing. And, you know, there's a lot of tic-tac stuff called. And, you know, I'm not going to get too involved in the whole reffing situation. But for Luka to miss off that and for Booker to kind of rub it in a little bit. He was talking to the ref on that play. But, you know, we all know what Booker is really trying to do there. He's kind of subtly trying to get under Luka's skin. And you could tell that they just don't like each other. And I think that's great for the NBA. We need more rivalries like that. And I think, you know, Suns Mavs, is, you know, if they do meet in the playoffs, there's going to be a lot more of that. It's going to be Twitter will be toxic. And, you know, I think that's how it was like Damon already was like, you know, Elon Musk will have his first real challenge on Twitter if Suns Mavs meet in the playoffs.
That's how it feels. Let's dive into that side of it. The matchup, the head to head, what does this look like? Why was it still such a slog? Why did Reggie Bullock look like his old self again after being pretty subpar the whole season? And then he comes alive in his own way against the Suns. We'll talk about all of that stuff outside of just this fourth quarter in just a second. First, today's show, guys, brought to you by Prize Picks. You know the deal. Prize Picks came in. They kind of fixed daily fantasy sports. They knew that there was a problem, which you and I both know well, right? They are, it's pools. It's people who do this for a living. It's head-to-head. It's stuff that feels like it can be juice. Prize Picks eliminates all of that. It's just you versus the Prize Picks player projections. You can pick 2 to 6 players to set your lineup, score if they will score more or less than their projection, and you can win up to 25 times your money on any entry. It's that simple. There's basketball, college, college, men's and women's, pro men's and women's. They have NASCAR, tennis, Eurobasket, disc golf, every sport you love. There's a projection for you on Prize Picks. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. They offer safe and fast withdrawals, and they're currently operational in over 30 states, including Arizona, as well as out in Canada. Download the PrizePicks app now, guys, or go to PrizePicks.com to sign up and play this awesome daily fantasy sports game. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code LOCKEDON, which means if you deposit $100, PrizePicks matches that, puts $100 right back into your PrizePicks account. Don't forget to enter the promo code LOCKEDON at sign-up for an instant deposit match up to $100. Okay, so we talked about the last stretch, the last few minutes, but there was this was a great game throughout. I don't think any team won a quarter by more than 10 points. I don't think anyone had more than a, you know, 10-point lead or so, really, at any point in this game, Brandon. So the thing that I tweeted that kind of sums up my thoughts is I feel like to have some of the advantages that you mentioned a second ago in the fact that the Mavs had 38 free throw attempts, just 25 for the Suns. The 3-point stuff evened out by the end of the game, but Dallas was smoking hot from deep in the first half and the Suns could not buy a basket. Ish Wainwright came out and solved that problem a little bit. And for all that stuff to happen and Luka and Kyrie to both go off and slow the game down the way we know they can, it felt like the same exact story of last year's playoffs, and for the Suns to be in the game heading into the fourth quarter and then obviously come out and win it, that says a ton. And it was on the road. That just feels like a huge step forward to set aside Durant, but everything else kind of still working out to be even with this team rather than letting the lead just get to 20, 30 like we saw it do so much last season. that felt big. And then obviously to close it out with Durant and everything else is its own thing. But I think that this team has to come out of this game feeling like a major confidence boost with the way that they played.
Yeah, they need these reps desperately. I mean, anytime you have, you know, you're integrating someone like Kevin Durant to your team, you're going to need these late game reps for the playoffs. That's what this is all building towards. So to get this against a good Dallas team that's, you know, they're also trying to figure their stuff out with Kyrie right now. So it's kind of both teams figuring out. But like you said, there's not neither team led by more than 10. I think it was the biggest lead for the Suns was 9, Mavs was 8. There's 13 lead changes. The longest run was 9. So it was back and forth all game. These two teams were fighting. And, you know, that's one of those games without Durant, the Suns would get down by 10, 15. And then Dallas with those threes could just close it out and just kind of, you know, make it pretty much a closeout game by the third quarter. So the Suns being able to hang around and to absorb those punches with KD leading that bench unit, that's a huge part for me. I think what his chemistry with Jock too, and just kind of like, you know, campaign, Damian Lee, you can already see that developing, and that's going to be huge. We don't know how many of those guys are going to play come playoff time, but KD being able to lead that group and kind of win those minutes or at least go neutral is huge.
Yeah, that lineup got outscored by 5 in the first half when it played. I don't know. I didn't track it as closely in the second half. It didn't feel as bad by any means. Yeah. Somebody commented on my last video when I was talking about Durant, recapping the Bulls game, talking about Durant playing 31 minutes. And I guess I wasn't super clear, or maybe I didn't know at the time, but Durant said post game, like he was supposed to be on a minutes limit again. Somebody had commented like, good to see KD's already out of the minutes limit. And I was like, no, that's actually not what happened. Monty just didn't listen to it. Then you look up tonight and he's at 40 minutes. And so I guess we're past the MCL. I guess that never happened. I don't know. But yeah, for him to, it felt like every single time Dallas made a run, KD responded to it. Some of the times when you saw the lead slip away or Dallas build their lead was when it was only Book. And there were some moments, I'm not going to like make this all rosy, right? Like there were some moments where either it was just Book and it felt like he was forcing a little bit, or there was a stretch in the second half where the offense, like they kind of just stopped running offense. And I put out there like, okay, like that's fine. That's what basketball is sometimes, especially against Dallas. But if that's the case, the ball needs to be in KD's hands. And it feels like they figured that out and fixed it by the end of the game, like we talked about, but Dallas can just still do this to you. And so yes, to have Durant be able to answer that was awesome. But this is still a bad matchup. What did you think of the way that they were still able to slow this thing down? And I guess it's 130 to 126. It wasn't quite as ugly, as it has been in the past, but especially that second quarter where Luka was just, you know, going to the line, living at the line, and they have these guys stepping up again. Wood played like the best defensive game I've seen from him in a while. Bullock looked like himself again. That was surprising to me how much these role players stepped up, because they've not been as good for Dallas this year as they were last year.
Yeah, that second quarter, I'm not sure it was longer like that or the Super Bowl. Like it just felt like, you know, and Dallas does that. It's kind of their strategy is like slow it down, make it a little bit ugly at times and get to the line, frustrate teams and just really seek out the weak link on each side of the floor. And they did that time and time again. And that's why, you know, like I said, Jason Kidd's done a good job with what he has. And Monty made some adjustments back. And I think there's going to be a lot of experimentation. We're going to see Ross and Warren and Ish, you know, Craig, all those guys are going to be juggled around the lineup throughout this, you know, these next 17 games or so. So there's going to be some frustrating lineups that I'm sure we're all going to kind of scratch our heads out. But it's more of just Monty trying to make sure he's exhausting all options and figuring out what's going to work the best and click in such a short amount of time. So it's a difficult task, and I don't feel envious of what he has to do with trying to get this thing to work. But when you have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, that makes things a lot easier. So it's been fun.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. That play, I feel like Booker redeemed himself with some of the way he was. Again, look, 15 of 25, 36 points, 10 assists, 1 turnover. Amazing game. A lot of the shot making was ridiculous. He was beating the doubles, whatever. What really capped it off for me and made me be like, okay, as much as Dallas poses a problem, Booker is able to solve them a little bit, maybe better because Durant's around, or maybe just having seen it for a playoff series, whatever the case may be. That last finish he had, I don't remember exactly when it was, is in the fourth quarter, where he just bulldozed Bullock to the basket and finished over him. I don't know if he got the and one, but he definitely finished through contact. After a bunch of times of it felt like Booker was getting kind of frustrated with him. That was very cool to see, because I don't want to make this that it was just KD. It was like Booker trial and error and figuring things out himself too. Yeah. The people are commenting about these fouls. I know, Brandon, you said you don't want to talk too much about the ref stuff, and we don't have to overdo it, but
it was a thing. It was definitely a thing.
It was a thing. I don't know how you feel about the main problem that I had with the fouls that were getting called, the fact that Luka had the 19 free throw attempts, is it felt like there was a big difference between whatever was happening on the Mavs end or the Suns end when somebody was just dribbling in space, driving to the basket, doing whatever, and the way that Luka was getting calls when he just decided to put his back to the basket. It felt like as long as has his butt against somebody, then all the rules are different. And that felt pretty ridiculous to me, because it rewards less effort. You know what I mean? It rewards laziness, and it just, I don't know if every single call was wrong. I'm not trying to make it about that. But what I can say as somebody who watched the game is it sucked to watch. It felt cheap. And yep. I don't think they held it to a high level of scrutiny compared to what they do. I'll even give it a Dallas example, right? That foul, that contest by Ish against Kyrie on the three that I started with to open the show, that probably should have been a foul. That's not a foul, but Luka gets one bump from Chris Paul on the next possession down, and it's like, okay, free throws automatically.
Yep. No, it's tough to watch. It's really ugly to watch. It just ruins the whole flow of the game. And like I said, when teams can just go down and play pure basketball and there's not a lot of whistles, that's when some of the best games in NBA history have happened like that. You know, you look at like Warriors, Cavs, you look at any high level of play where, you know, they just play basketball. Like when the refs try to take that away and just makes it such an ugly game for both sides. And there's a lot of that tonight. Like you said, every time Luka got in the paint, you knew it was going to be a foul. He's just, you know, seeking out contact, kind of throwing his body into defenders. And, you know, it's rough to watch. It really is. And I won't harp on it too long, but it's, yeah, the Luka special, as the chat is saying right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Do you think that that's part of why the Suns, but really a lot of players, it seems like, get so frustrated by Luka too? Because I feel like you can see the players responding to that as well, where it's like, you're not playing basketball. I think that's the vibe that I get from opposing players when they watch him lean into that. Not every game, he doesn't always play like that. I think it was especially bad today because he didn't have his shot going. He was 8 of 23 from the field, 1 of 9 from 3. He just decided he was going to live. He didn't even have 5 assists. He only had 4 assists. So really all he could do today was get to the line. And I think that guys just get tired of that too. And I think that contributes to the frustration. And then when he doesn't get a call, when he misses the bunny, then it's just like, all right, it's over. Like they're going to pile on and make him feel like crap because he's relying on something that's not sustainable, which is getting a call every single minute that he wants to.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like every superstar in the league complains, every superstar tries to, you know, manipulate the rules, but it seems like it's just more with him, and it's just constant like conversation with the refs and just, you know, the whining, it gets old. But you know, we have Chris Paul and he does it too, but it's not something that's like an all game thing. He'll just do a rip through or do some savvy move or point at the bench when there's an extra or not enough players on the court. So he'll just find a little ways to,
that was amazing.
You know, he's like a meme generator, whereas like Luka does it the whole game. And it's like, it's just exhausting at some point. So I think it does contribute to the fact that it's tough to watch. You know, he's incredibly talented, not taking anything away from him. But when it comes down to like the foul baiting, it is ugly to watch.
I'll take something away from him if you don't want to. I will, because I used to love watching that dude. And it feels like every year this stuff just gets more tiresome. Maybe I'm just getting tired of it. You know, I don't know. Last year and this year, maybe he's kind of played the same way, but it's definitely getting exhausting. Let's dive in. I have a new recap show segment that I want to start, which is just going to be called The Adjustment Period. And we'll just talk about all the stuff that falls under that. Rotation, shots, Ayton and Paul combining for 15 shot attempts, which was a little crazy in this one. So we'll dive into all of that in a second. First, today's show, guys, brought to you as well by Built Bar. If you want an amazing, delicious treat, Without a lot of fat and calories, you've got to try a Built Bar. It's that simple. With Built, healthy is actually tasty, and they're so delicious you won't even realize how good they are for you. What makes a Built Bar so good is that, for starters, they're covered in 100% real chocolate, and they come in delicious flavors like churro, peanut butter brownie, or coconut almond. After all these years of Built being a partner, they've sent me countless boxes to try. I've bought countless myself. I still don't quite understand how they are so delicious while maintaining the amazing macros that you want to put into your body. Never really going to cross 150 calories or 5 grams of sugar with a Built Bar, but you're always getting 15 to 20 grams of protein. If all that sounds great, if you need to restock, whatever the case may be, you can go to Built.com as you always have been, but you can also go to your local Walmart or Sam's Club. That's right, if you live in the Valley, if you live near one of these stores, which everybody in America basically does, you can get a Built Bar that much more conveniently now. 4-bar boxes at Walmart, 13-bar jumbo boxes at Sam's Club, whichever fits you, whichever suits you, or go to Built.com, do combo packs, build your own box, all that good stuff. Tons of ways to try a Built Bar. Point is, you got to do it. All right, let's close things out, Brandon. So we'll call it the adjustment period, because that's the kind of catchphrase buzzword for this team right now. And I think where we have to start, and I don't, again, I made this point in the last show when I was talking about some of this stuff and people still found a way, oh, he's so negative. It's like, what do you want me to talk about? Do you want me to just sit here for half an hour and talk about how great Kevin Durant is? That'd be a boring podcast. So we have to talk about this stuff. They won the game. That's what matters. We credited Ayton for getting that tip back. That was a big time moment. He got the offensive rebound. He got the foul that he drew on the loose ball foul, all that stuff. But those guys only combined for 15 shot attempts. He and Chris Paul, only 15 shot attempts. I'll just ask it to you this way so it doesn't have to necessarily be negative. How much of a problem do you think that is when you have two guys go for 73, but the other two combined for 20 points on 15 shot attempts?
It's definitely something. Like, I think it's, like we said, like, this is a great name for the segment, the adjustment period, because there's going to be a lot of adjustments on the fly. So I think this can't be a regular thing. It's going to happen from time to time. It's just natural. When you have two guys as talented as Booker and KD, you know, that get their shots, it will be tough at times for Ayton to find his rhythm. But as long as they're playing within the offense and moving the ball, I think at times there could be some games where Booker and KD kind of go in that ISO ball, and that might be your best shot at scoring, and that's fine. But there's going to be some cold stretches where, you know, DeAndre might not touch the ball for, you know, 5 or 6 straight possessions offensively, and he has to be fine with that and just crash the glass and stay engaged. And, you know, that's the main thing with him. It's never been about the numbers in terms of, you know, how many points he's scoring. It's about how he's getting them and how active he is on the glass. So, and Chris, you know, he stepped up when they need him to. He made some big shots and, you know, in the last game. But, you know, I think with Chris, it's just a confidence thing with the three. They need him to shoot threes. That's what it comes down to, because he's going to get a lot of open looks from three. And if he's not shooting them willingly, then with confidence, then that could be an issue as well. Because we already have Okogie, who, you know, his shot has improved, but you never know what you're going to get with Okogie in terms of, you know, the 3-point shooting. So you can't have two guys out there that are unsure of their shot.
I agree with all of that. I will say that the 3-point stuff is exactly what I thought about when I was seeing people posting on Twitter that, how do you only let Paul have that many shots? They need to get him going. Even, I think some of this is fair, of the idea that, like, if Paul is playing the role that we've seen him play at times over these three games without the ball in his hands, you're kind of removing what makes Chris Paul special. I think that is a fair analysis and something that they'll probably need to work out. Maybe it's putting Paul in some of those Durant plus bench lineups as we get closer and into the playoffs, when people are playing more minutes. That could be something. But he didn't take a lot of shots that were open, and so there's only so much that I'm necessarily going to complain about field goal attempts specifically, when I see him pump faking, kind of bringing a possession to a halt a little bit when there's an open shot. It's not like there were 15 of those opportunities, but there might have been 4 or 5. And it might be weird to see a Chris Paul stat line where he takes 10 threes, but I think there's going to be games where that's what he needs to do. He did make that one mid-range shot late. He missed that one that Luka contested, though, and that felt like it could have been a defining moment. Obviously, they go on to win anyway. And then Ayton, I'll say, I liked that he was more engaged and involved and impacted the game. There were a lot of Mavs games in that second round series last year where Ayton just disappeared. And that just can't happen. And I liked that we saw some small ball five with Durant when Wood was out there, and that can be a way to not put Ayton in a bad situation. But when he's out there, as long as they're good situations for him to be effective, he needs to be effective. Monty stuck with him when he got that fifth foul, which was good. I think that this was still an impactful, positive Ayton game, even despite that they did not find him for some of those shot attempts overall. But let's go over to the rotation to Okogie. You mentioned it earlier in the show, 3 of 13 from the field, 0 of 8 from deep, and then Ish doesn't even see the floor in the first half, comes in really in Ross's place, I would say, in the second half, and then ends up closing the game, making multiple big-time threes, tied his career high in three-pointers made, and was there to be a presence defensively as well. Do you feel like Wainwright has earned the opportunity to get a look next game, potentially play more with the starters down the line?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really just going to be, it's going to come down to who's hitting their shots, because between those guys and Okogie, Craig, Wainwright, Ross, Warren, they're all going to get a ton of open looks. So it just comes down to if you're hitting your shots and you're playing within the flow of the game, you're going to get a chance to close. And I think, you know, Ross coming in, he was a minus nine this game in 12 minutes and missed the one shot he took. That's just, that was rough. Dallas went at him every single time. With Ish, at least, you know, defensively, like, you know, whether he's hitting his shots or not, he's going to try, and he can, you know, guard, you know, bigger forwards as well and rebound. So that's kind of where he has a little bit of an edge, I think, over Ross, which we talked about last episode in terms of just playoff rotations. I think Wainwright has a chance to really play in some, you know, crucial games where we saw today, like how clutch he was with those threes. So it just comes down to him and Okogie, who's making their threes, who's not. And if you're making your threes, you're going to stay on the court.
It's so interesting. What do you think of Craig? Because this, I think, is a bad matchup for him, but it kind of reminded me, the reason I think it's a bad matchup is that it kind of reminded me of, if you think back to the bubble when he was on Denver and was like guarding LeBron, I put that in parentheses because he just is a strange player where his size and physicality just doesn't do much against these big wings. Like you would look at him physically and feel like he's somebody you would want to throw at Luka, but it doesn't feel like he puts up much of a fight. And I don't know. I don't want to overreact. I don't think Monty will overreact. Craig has earned a lot of goodwill. He's been reliable for them. I know people point to the net rating. That's because he was healthy through their awful stretch where they lost to freaking Houston twice, right? That's all skewed. I think he's been a positive player for them. But I watched the past three games, and I wonder sometimes if Craig might be the guy to just get a DNP when we're not expecting it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think this is a reputation-based league, so I think the idea of Craig is, you know, kind of fading a little bit for me, at least just in terms of just defensively, like you would expect him to be more of that, you know, lockdown wing defender. And we just haven't seen it as much this season. But I will say he is, like you mentioned, he's a veteran, he's reliable. He's played in, he has a lot of playoff experience, you know, surprisingly has, you know, I think played nearly over 50 plus playoff games at this point of his career. So he's someone that Monty can trust, but is he going to stick with him when it counts down in crunch time? That just comes down, like I said, who's hitting their shots, who's playing well defensively, and what's the matchup. So there's a lot. I think Okogie, though, at this point has earned the right to, you know, as long as he's not shooting 0 for 8 from 3 to close out those games. So, there's going to be a lot of juggling late game, and that's just something we have to, you know, it's going to be a game-by-game basis.
Any final thoughts here? 130-126, that was an exhilarating game. Awesome basketball. Very interesting preview of what could be a playoff series. We don't know what the standings will look like. Everything is so jumbled. They could face each other again. Any parting words for the audience here, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Durant and Devin Booker are the best duo in the NBA, and they're on the Suns. So it's a pleasure to watch them play. You know, the other thing I want to point out is Paul and Booker, 17 assists and only one turnover. That was huge. And you kind of mentioned that earlier, just, you know, it could have been an ugly game, but they took care of the ball. And I think that was the ultimate difference in this Mavs game, because in the playoffs, they had some tough times with the turnovers. I think a lot of that is a credit to KD. Having a giant 7-footer that can get a shot wherever he wants kind of helps. So got to give him some credit there too.
Yeah, I mean, you think back to games 3 and 4, right? One of them was like the 25-plus turnover game. The other was the game where Paul fouls out with a lot of offensive fouls. Those are also turnovers. And so I think I looked it up. The Suns averaged 15 turnovers per game in the Dallas series last year. And you think some of the games, they were pretty low. So really there was some high, high turnover games in that series. And to average only 9, I mean, that's part of why the game was so fun. It was only 10 turnovers for Dallas on the other end. And that just makes for good basketball. But it's also what you have to do, because you can't give Dallas any more advantages. This is already a tricky matchup. This is already going to be a tough game to win, no matter what the situation is. As we saw today, you can't give them more advantages. That's part of why, I mean, we don't have too much more time, but campaign just getting bowled over by Luka and the 3 turnovers makes him a tough play here against the Mavs. But that'll wrap us up. A big thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen after Suns Mavs today. 130 plus on YouTube live. Follow, subscribe, get the show in your feed every single Monday through Friday. In the meantime, go make Locked On NBA your second listen to get caught up on all things NBA. I'll be on that show talking about this game as well. They're on all podcast platforms. We're good. Thank you, everybody. That'll wrap us up. Goodbye.